This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirstie Rice. Exams are over. Only one more theatre presentation to go and then school is done for this academic year. And, well, in IB, school's never really done for the 2 years. We're already getting all the emails about what needs to be done over the break. But, yes, very exciting times this week in our house.
Oh, good. So does that mean back in the office for you next week?
Yeah. No, I've been in the office. I was in the office last week as well. My husband was home doing exam invigilating duties.
So is he home this week as well?
No, he's back in Denmark. He went on Sunday night.
Gotcha.
So what's going on with the baby? Buddy, little buddy.
Dickie, I'm off to puppy preschool tonight. There's four of us. And, of course, even COVID has made its way to puppy preschool as well. So only one of us is allowed to go with the puppy and only four puppies. And there's another Labradoodle, which I'm just a little bit excited about. So, yes, it's going to be interesting. Buddy went for his first walk today on a leash, which was very exciting. We walked down to the end of the street and back again.
How long did that take?
Actually, he was pretty good. He was pretty kind of, you know how puppies just bounce? They just bounce up and down like little lambs. They're very lamb-like Labradoodles as well. Yes. No, it was good fun. It was all good fun. It is so lovely.
He had all his shots, so to speak, so he can go to puppy preschool. Is that how that works?
Well, this is interesting. He can go to puppy preschool. He hasn't. He's got one last shot to have. But, of course, at the vet, it's a sterile environment and all the puppies are vouched for. Do you know, they've all been at home. So they're all, you know, kind of like the same sort of COVID quarantine. We know that they're all good because they've been to the vet and they've been tested and the vet has said, yes, we'll let these puppies play together because they're not with other dogs. We know that they're all.
Oh, yes. Okay. So is the puppy preschool local or do you have to go, are you going into town, as you say?
Yeah. Yes, no, it is fairly local. It's about 15 minutes down the road in McLaren Vale, which a lot of our listeners would know as a wine area.
I was going to say, do you get a bottle of wine with that?
Oh, Nikki, this could be another contact for finding more. There has to be wine at the McLaren Vale Puppy Preschool, surely.
Okay. I'd imagine.
Okay, Nikki, let's move on to our four fat expat questions. Nikki, have your children ever done a travel timeline or something similar, sort of for kids?
No, they have not, and I have really no concept about what you're talking about, so I'm going to sit back. I'm going to let you take it from here, Kirstie. Explain it all to me and then tell me what you've done or what you're going to be doing.
No, well, I just wondered because I saw the lovely Bridgie Dunn, who was famous in Qatar for Bridgie Dunn. Now, what was she called? Mrs. Dunn's Art Class Fun, I think it was, or something like that. But Bridgie is one of those fabulous people that could, you know, just make something from nothing and has a beautiful home full of lovely little pieces that she's either made that look amazing that you want to buy and you instantly say, can you make me one of those? Or that she's sort of sourced from around the traps. And she's always thinking of fun things for kids. She's got two young boys. But I saw in our Facebook group, our Two Fat Expats Facebook group, she'd asked anyone like if they'd done a travel timeline for their kids because she has recently moved to Saudi. They're not going anywhere. Obviously, they cannot get out. And the big excitement for her was the pool recently opened and so they're just doing a lot of pool time and sitting around. But she was asking about it. And then someone else jumped in when she asked and said, oh, have you considered doing a mind mapping alternative, like for kids? And I was thinking, oh, I guess that one would depend on the age of your kids as well. So I went to go and have a little look for what it was, and I did see on Pinterest there's a lot of mind mapping activities for travel for kids and whatever, and it's where I guess it's probably a more organized scrapbook, but you're just throwing everything there. But it got me thinking, because, I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing when you've had children. And one of my favourite Instagram shots with our kids is there's an atlas that I actually gave G when we first got married. And I got the kids because it's a double, one of those massive big atlases you can open up sort of in an A3, I guess, size. And there's a huge map of the world, and I got the kids to each put a finger on where they were born. So there's these four little fingers all pointing to their different locations that they were born. And it's just one of those great Insta shots that, you know, would mean nothing to anyone else but means a lot to me. And I've always thought, God, I wish I did a little bit more of that. Do you know that I would have made more of the places that we were and them, their lives within it, you know, sort of dedicated. And I thought, you know, if they were younger, it's definitely something I could do with my youngest, but I've missed the boat with my eldest, definitely. But I was thinking, with COVID and the fact that we have so many people that are home for the summer, as in they are not in their passport country, but they're in their expat country, or they've been sent back to their passport country and they're not sure where they're going next or how that's going to work. And I thought, this would be one of those great little exercises where you kind of have the time to reflect and make something positive. You know, we're always thinking about what comes next. Where are we going to go next? What are we going to do next? And is this a chance for us to sort of take a breath, collect your thoughts, and look back? And maybe if you are putting it all down on paper, of showing your kids a little timeline of where they've traveled and where they've been, that could almost be quite therapeutic.
Well, it could, Kirsty. You could frame all that up as an idea, and it's also a moving thing, right? So it's also when you move. So let's collate everything and think about all the things. It's almost like a let's make sure it's part of our leaving well situation, Kirsty, where we
leaving well. That's it. That's it.
You know, that's one of my favorite phrases. You know, one of our potties wrote us a message yesterday, the lovely Eliza, and she said that they had evacuated, well, not more or less, they had left Beirut, where they were based, during COVID, and also because there was some unrest in terms of protesting about the economy before the COVID happened. And now they have found out that they won't be returning. And that is, and, you know, she was talking about how she feels a little bit probably how you felt when you left Libya, because you went home for Christmas and then never went back. And so that might be a good exercise for Eliza and her children to undertake in terms of their time in Beirut, to just make sure to go over it and think about all the good times they had and the fun, and also, you know, the frustrations and the traffic and the craziness, but also just put together that little travel timeline for her kids so that they'll always have that as a memory. And that will also help, probably particularly for those with little kids like Eliza does have, is helps the parents who are doing it with them work through all those things for themselves as well. Because it's not only kids that have to work through things, it's also parents. And we've talked before in this COVID environment that it's more difficult for parents because they're dealing with a lot of their own things as well that are perhaps different to what they would be doing in a normal move or a normal repatriation. And so it's sort of like could be sort of some family therapy, Kirsty. You've really gotten onto a good thing there. Well done.
Now, the reason I was having a giggle before when you said about leaving well is when the lovely Eliza sent the message to say, I've really enjoyed the podcast, this is what's happening in my life, I said, Oh, yeah, you know, it's really important to, you know, kind of leave successfully or leave, oh, I don't know. Nikki knows how to say it. I'm sure she'll tell you when she wakes up in Hamburg. So what is the phrase? What
is it? You have to leave well to start well. I think that's the thing. Yeah, no, you nailed it. You're all good. You're correct in there. So that's a good tip, and maybe we can look for some of those Pinterest links, as my husband says, Pinterest, to include in the show notes. Okay, Kirsty, what's a favorite personal item or piece of clothing that you've bought in your expat life, and do you still have it?
So a couple of things sprang to mind. I think probably my favorite personal item, but I didn't buy it. It was given to me as a gift, and it was some Libyan wedding jewelry that there's a special way that it's kind of presented, where it comes on a piece of Libyan carpet, and then the jewelry is pinned to the carpet, kind of sort of from top to toe of how it would be pinned to the bride, I guess, of, you know, we're starting with the headwear, the earrings, the necklace, you know, the bracelet, etc. And it is very special because it was, you know, a gift from friends, and that they gave it to us when we left. And, you know, I guess going right back there to that whole not leaving somewhere properly. And so it's something that I don't ever see anywhere else. I've never walked into anyone else's house and seen their Libyan jewelry.
Oh, your Libyan wedding jewelry. Goodness. Let's compare notes.
Yes. And when we moved, because it was always sort of hanging up, you know how carpets kind of often hang up on like a stick,
yes,
or something, you know. When we got to Canada, we met this fabulous couple that owned a framing business, and they had been expats and they'd moved all around. And they really got a kick out of it and said, you should frame it in a box, like in a big glass sort of box. And we've done that, which I really like. So it's kind of kept it clean and tidy and lovely. And
that must be in your house in Qatar, is it? Because, or did I miss that on my walkthrough of the Port Willy house?
You missed it on your walkthrough because it is currently sitting in the office with a lot of other artwork that is meant to go on the walls once the office is finished, which, hurrah, will be happening in 2 weeks. And then the other thing I thought of, my favorite personal item, and once again, it has an emotional, as these things do, I guess, is it's a particular ring. And when we lived in Libya, we used to go to Malta because we were going there to have baby visits because I had my third child in Malta. And it was the first time, you know how there's always those fancy little streets in every city, there's a fancy little street that has maybe the Chanel or the Chopard or the Louis Vuitton, yes, or the unfamiliar, whatever. Do you know? Yep.
I work, yes, at the end there of that street in my in
oh,
Hamburg.
Do you?
Yes. I go through it. I go all the way, yes, down it, and then I get to the other end and cross the road, and then that's our street. That's where we are. But, yes, I look and I think, look at the people in the shop saying, what are you going in there for? Like, what are you buying?
Yes. What are you buying? And there's usually a Lamborghini out the front, or whatever.
Bentleys. Lots of Bentleys here.
Yes. So there was one of those little areas in Valletta, and I had never seen it, but Chopard do this floating diamond series. And, Nikki, they do a watch that has, you know, five little floating, and they call them floating because they're on these little triangular spinny things, almost like what would you call a spinning top, but they're a spinning diamond. And so as you move your hand around, these diamonds all spin around in the watch. But they also do a little love heart with one simple spinny diamond, or a little, you know, square sort of a princess cut. And so there was this single princess cut diamond ring that had this one little spinny diamond. And, you know, I never even walked into the store. I used to just look at it longingly through the window and think, oh, imagine. But kind of knew that that was not in our life at that period of time and was not going to happen, and that it was just a dream. And so fast forward, I guess, so that was when I had my third son. So fast forward 3 years later, or maybe even four, you know, I was given a gift every time I had a baby, but when I had my fourth baby, no gift, which I had put down to no money, no, you know, we've lost track of this. With the enthusiasm is gone. Just hurry up.
Oh, the push presents dried up. The pushing presents just they went away.
Just hurry up and get in the car. It's time to go. and I had gone back to work, and G had to go to London for work one weekend and said, do you reckon you could come? And, you know, back in that day, you know, you could, for an Australian, flying from the US to London wasn't a big deal because it seemed really quite a short flight, that 8 hours. And so I did. I finished work on a Friday. You know, G and I jumped in a cab. He said, I've just got to stop somewhere before we get to the airport, stopped, and then gave me this ring. And it was just amazing. Yes. And I always feel so shallow. I don't often tell that story. Now I've told everybody. I always feel very shallow about it, but it really was just, you know, there's something that you just covet that you can't imagine you will ever have.
Ever.
And it comes completely out of the blue, and it's a complete surprise. And yeah, just amazing. And I love it. I wear it now as my engagement ring. I don't actually wear my engagement ring. It's in the safe, but I wear that ring. So yeah.
So that's really interesting, because when you told that story, all I heard was, oh my God, G did all this planning first for the weekend away and then to go and buy the ring. I didn't hear anything about material item. I just heard G's part in it and the planning and the thoughtfulness and the that side of things. So
yes,
you can never know when you tell a story who hears what. Sorry, that was my chairman from Big Creek. But yes, you should. Yes, you can never know when you hear it. Yeah, exactly right. Who's going to hear what from the story?
Yeah,
you tell.
That's
you know
so
what
true.
How you hear it.
Yeah,
but different people use different lenses. So there you go.
Okay, Nikki, what about you though? What is your, you know, your favorite personal item or piece of clothing?
Well, I had to say, I thought about this. I went to work the other day, and it's summer here, and it's we don't we work in this cool, very old, 20-foot ceiling building, funky, you know, in the art district. Doesn't have air conditioning. So that's fine, not complaining at all. But so you have to think when you go to work, oh, it's going to be quite warm today, so I'm going to have to actually dress, like, you know, in appropriate clothing so I'm not sweating and looking a little bit unkempt by the end of the day because sweat dripping off me. Anyway, so I just wore this top, and I thought about it, and I thought, goodness, the last time I don't remember the last time I wore it, because it's been a long time since I've been in an office, but I don't wear particularly office-y clothing because I work with architects and they wear very cool things that I can't wear. Anyway, but back to the subject, I wore this shirt and I thought, goodness, I recall seeing this shirt recently in a throwback photo on Facebook that I wore it on Zeke's first day of school in Hong Kong. So I wore it sort of 13 years ago. It's been that long in my cupboard. And then I
thought, that's a great dress to do that.
Well, it was just a shirt, but I just remember thinking, wow, I wonder how many other things I have that I've kept for this long that, you know, still can wear, et cetera, et cetera. And then I thought about the things that you buy and that you wouldn't be able to buy in other places, et cetera. So that's what made me think of this question. But I have a dress that I bought in South Africa, and there's a designer in Durban. I think she's local to Durban. Anyway, Durban has, I don't know if you know, Kirsty, if we've ever discussed it, but Durban has the largest Indian population outside of India, and because of historical things. So, but what she does is she takes saris and sari material and makes them into more traditional dresses, as in a regular dress you would buy off a shelf. So not at all in any kind of sari style. So I have this dress that I bought from her in Durban that I love. It's this sort of blue pattern, and it's just one of my favorite dresses, and I've had it, I guess, now over 10 years, and I just, whenever there's something, you know, particularly special or whatever, I just get it out. It's not a really fancy dress. It's not a really casual dress. It's just one of those, you know, you can wear it if you're going somewhere nice. The last, I was trying to think about the last time I wore it, and I can't remember, but I did wear it to my mother's funeral because it was a lovely, brightly coloured dress, and I knew, and that was what we did on the day. So it's a very special thing to me, that particular dress.
Yes.
And then the other thing is because it's my birthday this week, I have been going through the cupboard looking for something, and I found it. Also in South Africa, I don't know if I ever mentioned this, Kirsty, I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. Don't know if I've ever covered that on the podcast. Perhaps we could dedicate an episode.
No, I don't think we've talked about that.
Anyway, Mount Kilimanjaro is in Tanzania, or Tanzania, as the South Africans like to say. And I have always loved tanzanite, which is a gemstone that comes from there. So before I left South Africa, I bought a tanzanite. A stone, just a stone, not a ring or a necklace or anything. And for years, I've just had it in the drawer. You know, it's just in the drawer. If it was in your house, it'd be in the safe. But in my house, it just goes in the drawer. Anyway, I dug it out the other day because when my husband, when we're talking about things you would like for your birthday, I said, I would really like for to make my tanzanite into a piece of jewelry. So that is what I'm doing for my birthday. I won't be ready for brilliant. The day, but it is something that I can have and be mating. So I'm spending a lot of time on the Pinterest and shaking out designs because I'm so scared now. I've waited so long. I don't want to choose something that I don't, that I'll get sick of or I won't like. So I'm really struggling, but I am very excited to have it made into something. So that's something that I also have that I quite like. And
so will you get a ring or a necklace or what?
Well, I was going to get a ring because rings are probably, I feel more comfortable with that. I don't wear a lot of necklaces. But I've decided I think I am going to get a necklace. So I've been having a look at that. So nice. I'm just looking at settings and designs and things like that. And it's a little bit, it's a lot because I don't have any necklaces that I wear. So I'm sort of having to really think. I have quite a big neck, so I need to really.
You and I were having this conversation the other day where we're saying it doesn't seem to matter whether your weight fluctuates or not, but somehow as you get older, your neck grows older. I wonder if it's like your ears. You know how they say that your ears and your nose never stop growing? Maybe your neck just never stops growing either, but it just goes wider, not longer.
I don't know. Anyway, they're my two most remembered items, I think.
Yes. Okay. All right, Nikki, I need your advice. I have a couple of paintings in Doha that I've always wanted to have in our house in Australia, but it was just in the too hard basket, right? They don't fit on the plane. They're great big pieces of, you know, great big canvases. So it was one of those things of, oh, well, I guess they're with me until I eventually move back to Australia and I put them in a shipment and back they come. But obviously now that I've been here for quite some time, I think we're up to, well, we got here in March, so what are we now? April, May, June. I've been here for over 3 months. I was thinking, why, maybe this is a little exercise that I need to happen. I've got, you know, someone at the house in Doha who could take them off the wall and hand them to someone. And I saw there was a question in the Two Fat Expats page recently. Someone was saying about, you don't have a whole shipment, but maybe you've got a few things, you know, what's the best way to do it? And someone suggested something called an LCL shipment. I don't even know what that stands for.
Oh, Kirsty. What it is. Kirsty, did you know my husband works in shipping? Are you familiar with that?
I do. I do. I did cross my mind, Nikki. It did cross my mind. Anyway, What do you think?
LCL means less than container load.
Is that it?
It's that simple. It's that simple.
Okay, so tell me, because now I'll tell you what I read. It said the very helpful person who I feel very bad because I haven't written her name down, but she was, everyone was very thankful for her advice. But she said it's when your consignment gets put into a wooden lift van, then it gets loaded into a 40-foot container and it doesn't ship until the agent has a full container load. And she said it doesn't actually even load until they have enough cargo for the container. She said then it'll be deconsolidated at your shipper's agency warehouse at destination, and that you just sort of call a moving company and find out. But she said it'll take time, but it will be fairly economical. What are your thoughts? What should I do with my massive big paintings?
Well, I'd say that's really the only way to do it. If you get a dedicated DHL shipment or whatever, then it's going to be much more expensive, in my understanding to that. But yes, less than container load goes with what my husband, it goes with a freight forwarder as opposed to a shipping company because they will consolidate it. So it still travels on a ship, but like a shipping company doesn't sell directly to customers like who are like buying.
Yes.
Shipping company sells 2,000 container spots to somebody, and then those people then are responsible for filling the containers and putting them on the ship. So I would say from my
So you mean like a shipping company sells the containers to the Crowns and the Pickfords and the, you know.
Sells the slots.
Yeah.
They own the containers. Shipping companies own the containers generally. They sell the slots, and then and the Crowns and the Pickfords and the and there's also like lots of names of freight forwarders that if I said that I can't remember off the top of my head, but you would recognize them.
Yes.
As things you've seen, like Kuehne+Nagel is one that's German, and so they are like they put things together, like people buy smaller amounts of space and then that's their job to put all the things in the most efficient way so they can get the best rates. So they'll charge everybody a little bit more than it would cost for them to get the container and therefore they make a profit on that. And that's how they make their money in the chain. But yeah, look, it sounds to me like that's a good plan because it also sounds to me like you're going to leave your walls bare in Qatar. So is this like a mental shift that you're making?
No, it's not a mental shift, and I there is no fear of bare walls in Qatar because we moved house in Qatar about a year or so ago to a smaller home, so we had less wall space. But there's a couple, we built this beach house, and I remember saying, we've got these amazing Aboriginal paintings and I'm going to put them here and here, but I didn't really think about logistically how that was going to happen. I think I secretly kind of thought, oh gee, he'll work it out, he'll be able to whack them on the plane somehow, but you just can't, it's not going to happen, they're too big. So I really want to get them here. Now that I've spent a few months here, it's like, no, I don't. I have a lovely piece of artwork that I would really like to have here rather than the, framed print from the print shop. I'm a grown up now. I'm allowed to have a nice thing up there on the wall. But it was just sort of, how do I logistically do this? And I thought, Nikki Moffat will know the answer to this. Well, she'll be able Nikki to Moffat tell me.
Nikki Moffat doesn't know, but she thinks you're onto a good thing there.
I'm doing
now, Kirsty. I was reading a New York Times article yesterday that someone posted saying that the US has announced reduction and they're halting visa programs for the rest of the year, giving more jobs to Americans, which is important in a post-pandemic economy, obviously, to look after your own citizens. It said, though, the order also restricts the ability of American companies with global operations and international companies with US branches to transfer foreign executives and other employees to the US for months or year-long stints. And it blocks the spouses of foreigners who are employed at companies in the US. Officials say the ban on worker visas combined with extending restrictions on issuing new green cards would keep as many as 525,000 foreign workers out of the country for the rest of the year. Also, no au pairs. The horror.
Oh.
So what it got me thinking was, Well, first of all, I thought about my friend whose husband is already in the US and she and her kids are waiting to move over the summer. And I did worry about whether they'd already got their visas for that.
Mm.
And I'm sure that there are a few people for which this kind of announcement sends a lot of concerns if they're currently in split families or they were due to move to the US and the visa isn't sorted yet, etc. But what do you think this means globally for expats? Do you think other countries will also slow visas down while prioritizing jobs for their own citizens? And does a global economic slowdown mean a global mobility slowdown and therefore a global expat slowdown?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it's interesting, isn't it, with the no au pairs, you've got to wonder too about how that works for the kids, that, you know, our young expats, our TCKs who love to go and work in, you know, the camps, summer camps and things like that. You know, I guess there won't be any of that happening. That's quite a popular thing, I think, for international kids to go and work in America.
Yeah, well, my niece was going to go this summer, but of course she couldn't leave Australia. So
yes, yeah. But I also do think that large corporations will get around it in some way, as they tend to do. There'll be, you know, we know that people employ lawyers and HR specialists and whatever if there's someone that they need to get in. But I'm sure, as in any recession, and we are heading into a global recession, that is going to be one of the ways to cut costs, is you'll stop any of your shipping costs and your, relocation costs, and you'll try and get everyone as skinny as you can. I know that that's definitely happened in Qatar with the Qatar government has announced they won't be, that they don't want the Qatari companies to give the same bonuses that they've been given. They want people to start to break down some of those incentives that were given in the past. So I know for us that means that, you know, maybe your school fees won't be covered as much, or they'll be cut smaller, or maybe you won't get the incentive to go to the gym and the gym membership, you know, to work out, or you won't get, you know, the same housing allowance, or you won't get the usual bonus that you think you're going to get, or it's going to be harder to get a bonus. I definitely think that that's the case. We were around for the global financial crisis in 2009, and I can remember that's when we arrived in Doha was, you know, well, I guess it hit 2008. We arrived in 2009. And I remember thinking, gee, there's no global financial crisis here. Like, they're really, you didn't see it. Whereas in Houston, you saw mass sackings of, you know, 2,000 people in a day and police guards on office, you know, at the front of offices, you know, waiting for the guy who was going to lose his, you know, nut because he'd been fired after 20 years of service without so much as a thank you. So, but I really feel like this is everywhere this time. There is no safe place to hide. So what do you think? How do you see it happening around the world?
Yeah, look, I think that it will, and I understand why it will, and I see that there will be no hidden places this time, and I think that it depends. So different countries have also different labor laws, and so there will be some countries where people are much less protected, and that's where you'll have, you know, this, you might have these sort of massive layoffs, and then people have, you know, 30 days to leave the country if they can't find a new job, etc. Which is all this forced repatriation that we've talked about before that could be coming. And I think that there are other countries which have sort of better protections for workers, but then companies could declare things like force majeure, like that this is unprecedented, and then the same thing could happen. So I think it's a really scary time. And I was really interested in a poll that somebody put in the group not that long ago. Oh, you put in the group, Kirsty, not that long ago, where you said, you know, how you're feeling now about your job, like the reason that you're overseas out of your home country. How are you feeling? Do you feel safe? Do you feel secure? Are you worried? Do you know it's going? Has it already gone?
Mm.
And a lot of people, I think the majority of answers were, oh, we feel safe.
Yes.
And a lot of people commented, I don't understand, like, why, where are all these safe feeling people?
Yes.
Because for the people that feel unsafe, it's a really uncertain feeling. It's one thing to be in your home country where you have a base and friends and family and whatever. And also you have that when you're an expat, but it's a different feeling. I mean, I had a friend message me the other night and say, look, we're not telling anyone, but, you know, yet, but, you know, my husband has been given his notice and we're considering options to moving to these countries. And, you know, what do you know about this? Or can you put a post about this, et cetera? And so I was just thinking, you know, it is a very scary time because people live somewhere for years and years and years. Like, I have friends that have lived for nearly 20 years in the Middle East / UAE area.
Yes.
But they have no residency rights. So that is their home and that's the only home their children have known. But yeah, if they lose their jobs and they have to leave, they have to go to a country where none of them have ever lived before.
That's right. Really. That's right. And that's the thing. You know, I think often people think about this as a white middle class privilege thing of, you know, what are we going to do? But no, it's not. It's also, you know, I have it just when with my kids when they'll say, oh, Mum, you know, my friend Omar's really worried because his sister, she can live in Canada, but his, you know, mother can't live in Canada. So she's going to have to, you know, go back to Jordan or wherever. There is a lot of that in the expat world. And there is also, you're right, you know, there's a thing in Qatar, you can have worked for the police force for 30 years, but you're not Qatari. So if you lose your job, well, then there's no, you know, system for you. You've got to head back to wherever it is you came from. And yeah, that's, I think that people don't think about that when they're thinking expats. They're thinking about these fat cats with their, you know, amazing packages and their business class flight home. And they are the minority. You know, that's not,
absolutely,
that's not who we are anymore. And
possibly will never be seen again after this time in the world.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it is. I do agree. I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. But I also think doesn't all need to be doom and gloom, because the good thing is we've had a bit of time. We've all had a bit of time to think about it and get used to it and, you know, think about what we might do. Hey, we've got a plethora of podcasts where we discuss all of these things about new careers and new countries. And
absolutely.
So, Nikki, have we done our four fact questions? We have, haven't we?
We have. Let's move on to your three favourite things.
So my favourite thing this week, Nikki, has been a show that was on Stan called Love Life with Anna Kendrick. Have you seen it?
I have not.
Oh, Nikki, you will love it. No one should ever say that, should they? Because that instantly makes you dislike it. I thought it was superb. So the basis of it is it runs over 10 years. Anna Kendrick starts, I think it's meant to start in about 2012. And they start off sort of telling you that everybody has seven relationships in their life and the breakdown of what those relationships look like. And what I think is beautiful is it's been a long, long time since I've dated. I've been married for 20 years, but I could definitely see kind of the relationships with the ex-boyfriends, and then also the characters of her girlfriends and the relationships she had with her girlfriends as well through it. And the beautiful thing is you sort of see her grow as a woman. So you kind of see those early relationships where you're quite insecure and a little bit clingy, and you're really reminded about how young women quite often lose themselves in men in those early days. And I feel like a lot of women would really identify with that. But then you get to see her grow and someone who's so clear on sort of who she is and what her boundaries are, but it's really subtle. Like there's no massive moment, you know, where you go, oh, you know, she grew up or whatever. It just is just, it evolves. And I think for me, I just loved the choices that were offered to her. And it was just a reminder that the world for women has changed and grown so much just in my lifetime. I watched it with, you know, my husband and my eldest daughter. It wouldn't have probably been appropriate to watch with my youngest son, but I definitely think 15 and up you could do.
Okay.
I'm not going to ruin it, but when I was younger, I think that in the 90s, the perfect ending would have involved a wedding and a family, or if there was a family, there definitely would have had to have been a wedding. And I think this ending just showed you that she made these choices on her own and that they were all the right choices for her. We rolled an entire season in one go. Because I think they're about 30 minutes, 30 or 40 minutes, and we just sat there and there's 10 and we just rolled it in that night. It must have been under 30 minutes for us to do the 10. But, yeah, it starts off saying that by the time the average person ends up with the love of their life, they will have been in 7 relationships. And it's got that narration over the top.
Yes.
And it's got a narration of an older voice. And we all the way through, we were sitting there thinking, who is that? Because it kind of sounded like, did you ever watch Call the Midwife?
I was going to say, it's like Call the Midwife.
Oh, yes.
It's got the narration. And yeah. You know it's one of the characters, but you're not sure which character.
Yes. And so it kind of had that sort of older, knowing sort of narration. And then right in the final scene, you see someone talk to someone and you go, oh, that's him. That's the voice. But it's not someone that's been there all the way through. But it is really, I thought it was just lovely, lovely, honest, real, just fantastic. And Anna Kendrick is brilliant in it, absolutely brilliant. She is really good. So that was my other one. And then I found this expat study, which was done by Oxford Research. And so they said that there's about 41,000 expats who are living in Denmark who kind of meet the criteria of their age 20. They were a foreign citizen after July 2015 and that they earn an average income of 30 a month. And then out of those people, they then, you know, sent them all surveys and got them to fill in and whatever. And by the end of it, they ended up with about 2,000 people that did the survey. 50% of them originated from European countries, 6% from Nordic, and another 6% came from countries neighbouring the European Union.
So hang on. So now the Nordic countries aren't European?
I know. I thought that too. And then I just thought, oh, well, maybe that I just don't understand. Maybe it's like sparkling homeschooling. I just don't get it. Anyway, 34% came from other countries, Africa, Asia, North America, et cetera, South America. And most of them were men under the age of 40. So as I said before, half of them came with their spouses or people that joined them later on. But what I thought was interesting, because, you know, we get all these surveys about where's the best country to live or where's the most expensive country to live or whatever. But this kind of looked more about what makes you satisfied and are you satisfied there? And 8 out of 10 were satisfied about living in Denmark, and they were very satisfied with their job from both a professional and personal point of view. And they had a high level of satisfaction with the Danish work culture. I think 9 out of 10 were happy with their life in Denmark, which I think that's big. But when they said about choosing a country to live, they said that the more important things for them were a well-functioning healthcare system, human rights and democracy. 67% of all female respondents find gender equality is important, no shit, Sherlock. And while only 46% of male expats held the same view, Nikki, they didn't find gender equality was all that important at all.
No, shock. Colour me shocked, Kirsty. Colour me shocked. I will say, though, my husband does work for a Danish company and he is impressed by the amount of – he works for a female and he is impressed by the amount of women in senior positions. He feels that it is far more equal than any other workplace he's ever had. So –
yeah.
We do have that conversation.
Yeah, and human rights is especially important. That was what else they said when they were looking at countries that they were going to work and live in, that was big. So I found that interesting because it made me think, Nikki, that we need to do a survey in our group because I think independent surveys are far more interesting than surveys done by banks and insurance companies.
Yeah, who are looking for customers.
Yes.
It's very interesting because in Denmark there is, I don't know, I haven't read the whole survey. I have had a quick look because I saw, oh, survey in Denmark of expats. There is a special rule for Denmark where if you're there less than 7 years, you get a special tax scheme because the local tax scheme is quite horrific and much more than regular people are used to. And people often refer to the Scandinavian countries as being happy and having good quality of life, but they do have quite high taxes.
Yes.
So
yes,
if you're there for under 7 years, you get to have a different tax scheme than if you're there for over 7 years. So that's quite interesting to me that all these expats were quite happy. I wonder if it would be the same if that special tax scheme didn't exist. Was there a question about that in there?
No, I didn't see that. But I haven't read the entire – I read sort of the general – this is what we got out of it. But there was a whole section on these are the exact questions we asked and these were the exact percentage of answers. So I'd go in and have a look at that. And we will put the link on our website at twofatexpats.com and in our show notes. Now, Nikki, the last thing that I wanted to talk to you about was lamb as one of my three favourite things because
– nothing wrong with that, Kirsty.
Yes. Obviously, being in Australia, lamb is very much on the menu, as it is with Australians. We are very much the country of the lamb roast. But I've been interested with, you know, when you – because now we so often search up recipes – you know, online rather than looking at our cookbooks. You know, you whack in whatever the ingredients are in your fridge and then, you know, what can I make with this? And up comes the recipe. But quite often on American food websites, and I am a big lover of, you know, the New York Times recipes. I think that's one of the best places you can go actually for food. But how often the Americans, they just can't stomach the lamb. You know, the words like gamey come out and
they don't. It's very interesting. I mean, I've told the dinner party story where I had the dinner party here in Hamburg and I made lamb and then I realized most of my guests were North American. The British couple and else were like, yay, lamb. And the other one's like, well, you know.
So what I was going to say to maybe our North American friends is maybe if you're sitting there thinking, well, I didn't grow up with lamb and I don't know how to do lamb, I would say just grab the leg or the shoulder and you can slow cook it so it just slides off the bone. It is so yummy. You can then shred it and put it in a burger or you can barbecue it. But I would, if I was a North American, use a rub just like you would with a brisket. I did a brisket last weekend for the kids. While we watched the footy, we did brisket with a rub and then in brioche buns with coleslaw. I mean, is there anything better than football food like that? Anyway, you can serve your lamb with couscous or you can do roast veggies or you can do rice or you can do flatbreads and make little shawarmas. And you can do even like a great little side salad, which I know is probably more to those in North America. So because it's hot, right, at the moment. So if you don't want to do the classic roast, if you think that's just too much, I have got a little Middle Eastern theme, and this is a winner. I did, my girlfriend Christina cooked this a few weeks ago, then I cooked it about a week ago, and I'll be as quick as I can, but I will put the recipe on the show notes. So you need 3 garlic cloves, just a tablespoon of ground coriander, a tablespoon of cumin, cardamom, cayenne pepper, and then 2 teaspoons of smoked paprika, and then just a little bit of salt and pepper and virgin olive oil, and there's your rub. And so you rub that in, and then you, on the side, you can have a plain Greek yogurt with some mint and some lemon juice and some olive oil and some salt and pepper. And then for your couscous, for anyone who's not sure about the couscous, I did learn this when I lived in Libya and then took it everywhere I go. Yeah, you can throw in your raisins or your sultanas if you want to. I know that some people, that would be gross, or you can throw in your apricots. You don't have to do that if you don't want to, but if that turns you on, do it. But otherwise, just do 1.5 cups of couscous and then the same amount of hot boiled water and just a vegetable stock cube, and you put a dob of butter in and then put some glad wrap over the top, and it will sit there and just soak it all up, and you leave it for 10 minutes and then you fluff it up with your fork. It really is that easy. Throw in your parsley, your mint, your lemon zest, bit of salt and pepper, and away you go. It's done. And it's yum, 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 yum. The only thing I would put in there, Nikki, is maybe some pomegranate seeds. I think that's, yeah. I love pomegranate seeds.
No, they're very good.
Yes, so that's my three favorite things. But Nikki, I want to hear yours, and away you go. Tell me about it.
Okay, so let's go start with trash TV. So The Politician season 2 is launched on Netflix. Now, I think I did mention The Politician in season 1.
Yes.
But I just want to just recap, because I saw it, I went, oh, great. Because it ended in a really bizarre way. Sort of, it was this whole school story about being at school and running for school president.
Oh.
And then it at the end of it, that was season 1, at the end of it, it flashed to sort of like 2-3 years forward, and the protagonist was in New York being a bit of a drunk and whatever, and then his sort of gang of people that got him elected, it was his election team in high school, turned up to stage an intervention and said, right, we found this state senate seat you need to run for, let's go for it. And they said that was the end of season 1, which was sort of a bit bizarre. Anyway, they launched into season 2. It's totally hilarious. It's totally jumped the shark. It's out of control. But I read it. I actually started watching it. I was like, actually, I'm really enjoying this because it doesn't seem to have to fit to any rules, which I think now in politics in the US, no one does seem to think they have to fit to any rules. So I think people have to become more and more bizarre and ridiculous in their television interpretation, because there is really nothing in real life that is off the table. So, but basically he's this young sort of up and coming guy, very young, still a student at university, who but never goes to university that we see. Anyway, who's running against someone who's been like a 60-year-old woman, who's been in the role for years and years and years. And her campaign manager is Bette Midler. And oh my word, it is just, she is fantastic in this role. But, you know, the older woman is living in this situation, which is, I think it's shown at the end of the first season, so that's fine. But it's a throuple. Like, she has a husband and a lover, and they all make love together.
All at the same time?
It's interesting. All at the same time.
Oh.
We would call it a threesome, but because it's a relationship, they call it a throuple.
Oh.
Because it's not just like something they do on Saturday nights. It's actually their living arrangements. Oh. Anyway, so and so the juxtaposition of, well, you'd think that'd be the young people, wouldn't you, that'd be in that situation, but actually, no, it's these older people. And anyway, it goes on and on and on. I am just thinking it's hilarious and I'm loving it. I did read a review because I thought, I think this is not going to go well for the show itself. And the politician, I saw this title to this article, said The Politician's Review Season 2 is a frivolous, half-assed follow-up, deep lust. But if you enjoyed season...
Someone in a group I was in was saying, did anyone watch The Politician? Absolutely loved it. So, but they were new to like season 1. So are you saying that season 1 is a little bit more
right
realistic?
Well, I mean, it's not realistic because anything about an American high school doesn't ever seem to be realistic. You know, like they have this whole other world. Season one is a lot heavier. There is a lot of more themes that they investigate in season one. Season two is like they've just left the whole serious investigation of things to the sideline and they're just embracing this whole free spirit of whatever you can be whatever you want in politics, apparently. Just depends on who decides to follow you on the day. So, but I think, look, if you enjoyed season one, I definitely roll out season two. And if you haven't, then I'd have a look at both of them, just if you're looking for some escapism. Now, the other one I have is Slow Burn. It's a podcast, Slow Burn, and it's on its fourth season. The first season, I think we talked about Watergate. The second season was the Clinton-Lewinsky situation.
I listened to that one.
Which I listened to both those two seasons because it was about impeachment of presidents and it was about how the process worked and how they came up with it. The third season was about Biggie and Tupac murders and, to be honest, I did not listen. So I cannot give a commentary on season three. Season four has come out and it is about David Duke. And David Duke is America's most famous white supremacist. And he came within a runoff of controlling Louisiana. So I'm guessing I'm not up to that yet, but he ran for governor in Louisiana and almost got there. So it's examining how did he rise to power and what did it take? Like what happened? Why was it stopped in the end? How did he not go any further? And I'm really, really enjoying it. It's sort of a return to the first two seasons, which is sort of more serious political stuff. And this is and I'm not saying Biggie and Tupac murders are not serious and political. As I said, I didn't listen to them, so I can't say. But I am really enjoying it. I'm learning stuff. I mean, I think I've always known that David Duke was a KKK imperial wizard or grandmaster or something, but I didn't really know anything more than that. I just knew that was his name and that was what he was known for. So it's interesting to me to get more of a background and more of an understanding about how it worked and how he presented himself and how he became quite successful in his chosen field, which was politics for a while.
Is it difficult listening at times?
No, yes. Sorry. It's again with this whole nothing's off the table now. I think, look, it's pretty pertinent given all the things going on globally now around Black Lives Matter movement and understanding racism and moving from being against racism to being anti-racist and everything like that. If you listen to it in that light, it's certainly, yes, it's difficult listening. But it's more just about the matter-of-factness and how he appealed to you only have to find a corner of a way to get in. And if you are just in that corner, and then people can justify everything else because they're happy with the corner, it's sort of like just lifting up a little bit. It's really quite interesting. And you see how it's an easy sell for him basically to do that.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds good because I really enjoyed Slow Burn season one and season two.
Yeah.
I thought the Clinton-Lewinsky one in particular I really, really enjoyed. So, yeah, I would definitely have a listen to that. That will be my bike riding and walking for this week.
So I only really have two things. The other thing, the third thing would be that I am doing 50 in 50, so 50 walks around the Ulster in 50 days and I'm in my last week.
Yes.
And the weather really, and I don't want to jinx myself, has been absolutely sensational and I'm just really enjoying it. Yesterday or the day before was the summer solstice, so the 21st of June is the longest day of the year.
Funny that, Nick. It was the winter solstice here.
But I've never really lived somewhere far enough north to really appreciate it, I don't think. So we have daylight saving and we're quite far north. And so it was really sort of 11:30 before it got dark. So,
oh, wow.
I mean, it was dark and twilighty, but really 11:30 before it was dark, so yes. Nighttime dark. So, yeah, it's all downhill from here, but all uphill for you. So, I mean, also downhill to the long days of summer for you. So, yeah, that's me for this week. my three favorites.
Actually, Nikki, there was one other thing I wanted to mention, and I just sort of discovered it before we came on to record, and that was the United Nations has opportunities for people who want to volunteer, and I just thought this would be brilliant for the expat. And if you were perhaps out of work at the moment and you want to ease your way back in, or you had some of those lovely soft skills that they're looking for, it's all online volunteering, so it doesn't matter where you are, and we'll put the link up for you. But they've got all sorts of different fields where you can get involved and you can help someone out. And I did put the link up in the Two Fat Expats Facebook group saying that I'd seen that they had a page dedicated to volunteer opportunities and asking if any of the fatterati had been involved. And Sinead had said that, yep, she's been volunteering with them for years and that it works really well and it's a fantastic opportunity to use your skills to help others. And she said opportunities can be a one-off project or they can be ongoing. So maybe think about that. If you're sitting there going, oh, I really need to get back into some sort of form of work, or I've got some extra time, I can help out. I mean, those things are great to have on your resume.
Yeah, and also a way to develop confidence, because one of the things is that if you know you've absolutely got this skill but you can't imagine being able to put it in a working environment at the moment,
yes,
for whatever reason, it's a way to bring back your confidence up and doing something worthwhile and worthy as well. Because
yes,
you say volunteer and people say, well, I don't want to do that, I don't want to do that, but this is – gives you options, especially if it's online, if you're worried about leaving the house.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay, Nikki Moffat, I've got to get off to puppy preschool.
Okay. Well, go, buddy. Good luck.
All right. And I will see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.